It's a joy to have our church as full as we can legally have it. And it's also a joy to have so many of our Catholic school families here today as we begin our Catholic Schools Week. Today I'd like to focus on our second reading, which is taken from chapter 7 of St. Paul's first letter to the Corinthians. And when I was vocation director for the diocese, I'd often think about this chapter and pray with this chapter, because in it, Paul teaches about the call to marriage, and he teaches about the call to the celibate life. And the first thing that he does in that chapter is to affirm the goodness of marriage and to use examples from married life. He affirms the goodness of marital intimacy and of families. So in verses 3 and 4, he says, "The husband should fulfill his duty towards his wife, and likewise the wife toward her husband. A wife does not have authority over her own body, but rather her husband. And similarly, a husband does not have authority over his own body, but rather his wife." So we hear St. Paul talking about how marriage is the unity of two people, and when you get married, you belong to that person. And this is a countercultural message, even though many, many people get married today. People get married and want to still remain independent somehow from their spouse. But the Bible has very little to do with independence, but rather teaching us how dependent we are, first of all on God, but then on one another. He creates the man and the woman at the beginning of the Bible, and he doesn't create them to be independent contractors who enter into a legal agreement, but rather to give a gift of their life to one another. And what a beautiful thing when a man gives his life to his wife and the woman gives her life to the husband, so that there could be a real unity there, something that's shared. So this is what Paul affirms right away in the beginning of this chapter 7, but then he does something that I think is kind of interesting. He affirms this teaching on marriage, he says, by way of concession and not as a command. In other words, he's saying that not everybody needs to get married. And then he says this, "Indeed, I wish everyone to be as I am. But each has a particular gift from God, one of one kind and one of another." So in other words, although marriage is a good thing, Paul is not saying that everyone should be married, but in fact says he wishes everybody would be as he is, which is to be celibate. Now, obviously, he's exaggerating here, because if this so-called wish came true, well, none of us would be here. So he's intentionally exaggerating. But isn't that interesting that he says, marriage is good, but I actually wish that everyone were as I am, which is to be celibate. But then he adds immediately, each has a particular gift from God, one of one kind and one of another. Each has a particular gift from God, one of one kind and one of another. So he's really articulating what we believe about our vocation, which is another word for call, that God calls. And he calls some to marriage. And that call, Paul describes as, in our English translation, it says gift, but in the Greek, it's charisma, which is a charism. And a charism is a free gift from God that God gives to a particular person to bless them and to bless the church. So God calls some to marriage by giving them this particular gift or this charism to bless them and to bless the church. But then he gives others a different gift, the charism of celibacy. So I think this is really good for us to think about, because it also makes us examine our views towards the celibate life. It's very relevant because we have so many families here who are raising children. What a wonderful thing. It's really important that we communicate to our children the truth of the church's teaching about marriage as well as about celibacy. And it's not easy to be married. You know, our second reading today, if we jump ahead to what we actually heard in our second reading, this is what we heard, which can be rather confusing. Paul says, an unmarried man is anxious about the things of the Lord, how he may please the Lord. But a married man is anxious about the things of the world, how he may please his wife, and he is divided. And then he talks about women. He says, likewise, an unmarried woman is anxious about the things of the Lord. A married woman, on the other hand, is anxious about the things of the world, how she may please her husband. So Paul is contrasting now this call to marriage and the call to celibacy. And he's saying that the call to celibacy allows a person to be devoted to the things of the Lord. But the call to marriage requires that one is devoted to the things of the world, and particularly to their spouse and family. Now, Paul's not being judgmental here when he says that the married man is divided, but he's being realistic. And you who are married, which are most people here, get this. That marriage isn't easy. It's actually very challenging. And especially if you have a family, it's not easy when you come to church and the priest says that, well, you need to pray X amount every day. And you think, okay, Father, well, you go through my calendar, my daily orarium, and tell me when I have time to do that. Married people often can feel themselves divided between their God-given responsibilities as spouse and parent and the call to have a life of prayer and service to the church. So it's very easy for our families to be to feel divided in this way. And the reality is that marriage is hard. Many of our young people are naive about how hard marriage is. Fulton Sheen liked to say that there are three rings in marriage: the engagement ring, the wedding ring, and suffering. And we laugh because we know it's true. And it's not to be cynical. It's just to acknowledge that marriage is hard. It's not easy. There are conflicts between husband and wife. And it's not easy to be a parent. There are conflicts between parents and children. There's much joy and much trial as well. And so this is why Paul is making this contrast between what it means to be called to marriage, which is a good thing, he affirms first of all, but then he immediately talks about how hard it is, and that married couples who want a relationship with God can find themselves divided internally. And then he talks about the blessing of being unmarried, because then you get to be anxious about the things of the Lord. So when Paul says, I wish that everyone would be as I am, he's really talking about the celibate life as a gift for that person. Why? Because they get to be devoted to the Lord. So I think a good question for us this morning is, how do we feel about the celibate life, and how do we communicate that to others? How do we live this truth in the church? It's very easy for us, even in the church, to have a hesitancy towards the call to celibacy. So I'll never forget the day that I told my parents that I was going to enter the seminary. It was during my freshman year at the University of St. Thomas, where I had a music scholarship. And so I had a very profound experience in prayer that confirmed to me of what I had been thinking about for many years was that God was calling me to go to the seminary. So I talked to the vocation director, and then I knew I needed to talk to my parents because I'd never talked to them about the priesthood before. And so I went home for the weekend knowing that I needed to have this conversation with my parents, and I asked them to see me privately in the living room and sat down, and it was a moment of silence. I was so nervous. I can only imagine what they thought I was going to tell them. So finally, somehow the words came out of my mouth. Mom and Dad, I think God is calling me to be a priest. And my parents' reactions were different. My dad jumped off the couch and wrapped me in a hug, a big hug, immediately. And I was surprised by that. My mother did her best to appear supportive, but she clearly had reservations. She's asking internally the questions that many parents, many good parents ask in this situation. Will my son be happy in this kind of life that's so different from the norm? Will my son be lonely, not having a spouse or children of his own? So I think my mom's hesitancy is a very normal reaction. So my experience in my life is that it's far from lonely. I think sometimes I joke that I wish that I felt lonely once in a while. And the reality, and married couples know this, is that everybody feels lonely sometimes. A married person feels lonely sometimes. It's a normal part of being human, this feeling of loneliness that we can have. I guess there's a couple experiences that I had in my priesthood that kind of have helped to shape the way that I think about my call to celibacy. And one, both happened to occur on Christmas. One was a Christmas day after I'd celebrated my Christmas morning masses, and I wasn't able to go home because it was just too far and I had masses the next day, but I was going over to some parishioners, the home of some parishioners, for Christmas dinner. And as I was walking out the door, the rectory phone rings. I was the only one in the rectory. So I pick up the phone, and it's the hospital. And there's an elderly person who's dying, who's asking for the last sacraments. And but of course I went, I just told the family I was gonna be a little late. And I got to the hospital, and I walked in, and the woman, before I could say anything, immediately started sharing her story. And it was a woman in her 80s who had gotten married out of the church when she was 18 because she's pregnant. And her husband wouldn't allow them to convalidate their marriage. And so she'd been out of the church for 60 years, but she said, "Father, I've never stopped believing. Every day I prayed that I could go back to communion someday." And so I, you know, she asked to go to confession, and her husband had passed away, so she was no longer bound by marriage, and so she's able to go to confession and receive the last sacraments of the church, and is the best Christmas present that she could receive in her life, the gift of Jesus, as she was making her way towards him in the dying process, and it was the best Christmas gift I could ever give somebody in my whole life. And I was so touched by that experience because I just imagined if I had a family of my own, a spouse, getting that call on Christmas and feeling divided. Do I get up and leave my family at the Christmas dinner table to go to the hospital? It made me really grateful for this call that frees me to be given over to God's people whenever they need me. But I guess more profoundly, one of my first Christmases that I was in the parish, it was a Christmas Eve, and I've shared this with some people, but after my Christmas Eve masses, it was a new experience for me to not be with family, and I didn't really know what to do with myself. I was imagining all of my own family and my parishioners around the Christmas tree, and around the fireplace and enjoying family time. And I was just turning off the lights in the church and locking the church doors and thinking, well, what happens now? What do I do now? So anyway, I went back over to the rectory, and as I was kind of thinking about this, I just had this inspiration to go back into the church. So I went back into the church, and I realized, first of all, that I'd forgotten to turn the lights in the nativity scene off, and my first thought was relief that I went back into the church, because now my pastor would have been mad at me if I had left the nativity scene lights on. So I was just thanking God that I, for whatever reason, went back. But the light drew me. The warmth of the light in the nativity scene, and the whole church was dark, it drew me. And so I went and I knelt in front of the stable, and I had the sense, the very strong sense, that Jesus and Mary and Joseph were inviting me to be a part of their family. And I stayed kneeling there for a long time, and I felt so much love and felt so loved. And what I've come to realize is that when God calls a man or a woman away from a biological family, He provides for all of the relational and spiritual needs for that person by bringing them in a deeply intimate way into God's family and into the family of the church. So I get it when Paul says, I wish that everyone would be as I am. I get it. Of course, he's exaggerating here. But the love that I experience from God, I wish everybody could experience. But I also realize it's unique because I belong totally to God. And I'm so grateful to belong totally to God. It's a treasure. For me, it's the pearl of great price that's worth giving up everything else in order to obtain. So our own attitude in the church towards celibacy should be joy and gratitude. When somebody says, gosh, Father, I feel so bad for you that you can't get married, I think, you're crazy. I don't feel that way at all on a variety of levels, but most importantly because of the love that I know God has for me as a celibate person, the love that I feel from Him and from the church. I would never want to give that up. I'm so happy to have received that gift. So let's ask God for a deeper appreciation of this deep mystery of our vocation, the call to marriage and the call to celibacy. And let's especially pray that in our own homes and families, we'd be so open and supportive of our young people, encouraging them to ask the question if God's calling them in this way. Let's pray for that God would call more men and women to the married life, sacramental married life, which is so good, and more men and women to the consecrated celibate life, which is such a blessing for the church, but such a blessing for them too.